The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome and welcome back to Dave's Gone By. 90 minutes of comedy, talk radio, music, opinions, commentary, dysentery, radio the way it ought to be. Or at least the way I think it ought to be sometimes. I'm Dave. Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, and humorist, and I've been hosting Dave's Gone By since we first went on the air way, way back, so long ago, October 6th, 2002. Okay, so it was less than a year ago, but since then we've done 43 original episodes, and I hope y'all got a chance to listen to some of them. Now, our first show was an hour long, late night, Sunday nights, 11 p.m. to midnight. The radio station basically said, hey, it's late, it's the weekend, nobody's listening, the kid seems to know what he wants to do, granted, he's a little eccentric, but, you know, this is WGBB, who isn't? So, they let me do my show, despite the fact that Dave's Gone By isn't a topic-specific program. It's not a cooking show, or a fishing program, or a gospel hour, or a hip-hop thing. It's a mix, a blend, a potpourri for 200, if you will, Alex. I wanted to be able to create a radio show that would allow me to spiel a little, joke about current events, play some interesting music that most likely other radio stations aren't playing. Not exactly freeform radio, there's usually an arc of some kind, but it's still rather loose and open. And then I try and tie everything together with my personality, my perspective, such as it is. The only way I can describe the show is to compare other programs that it isn't like, but is influenced by, such as Idiot's Delight with Vin Scalzo, or Harry Shearer's Le Show. You might also hear echoes of Joe Franklin, or Steve Allen, or Bob and Ray, or Dr. Demento. One segment we do pretty much every episode is the News Gone By, a look at news and world events from a really sarcastic, silly perspective, kind of Weekend Update meets Jon Stewart meets Howard Stern meets the 700 Club, except Jewish and non-sectarian, but still. In other words, this show is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Actually, you do with a box of chocolates. You get chocolate. You open the box, and there's these little brown things. You sniff them. You maybe try to dig your finger in the center, and then you taste chocolate. And maybe fruit, peanuts, bug parts, iron filings. It's all good. And this program is equal parts chocolatey goodness, a little nuts, kind of fruity. No, don't go there. I love the theater, but I'm not that way. And a few parts that will bug you. And it's all called Dave's Gone By, and it's 90 minutes. If you were listening last season, you'll know that we started as an hour-long program. Then we went to 90 minutes for a few weeks, and I really liked the longer format. It allowed me to play more music, to be more expansive in interviews. Made me feel like I didn't have to rush and cram everything into an hour. When the decision was made to bring the show back for another season, I really wanted the extra time, and I've got it! 6:30 to 8 p.m. every Monday night. New time slot, kind of post-afternoon drive, pre-prime time, plus we've got that weeknight energy going. The weekends had a very mellow, low-profile aura. Most radio stations, if a guy can play Oh Susanna on his kneecaps, they'll put him on the weekend. But there are people listening. And there's a nice, clubby, chummy, cult-like feel. Half the shows that I listen to regularly on the radio, Glenn Jones on FMU, Vin Scalzo on FUV, Dr. Demento streaming from a station in Maine, they have an off-center weekend ambiance. And I would have been cool staying in my old slot, but when I went on vacation, the station filled the hour with another show, and they kind of settled in. So, at that point, we all agreed to give this program a higher profile, an early evening weeknight, and we'll see how it goes. And how it goes is, each show is a little different. Some are a little more talk-heavy with interviews, sometimes with actors and actresses and directors, or people with more atypical occupations. For example, last season, we talked to everyone from a professional whistler to a fella trained to search out drugs and weapons on airplanes, to a guy who got in legal trouble for sending hate mail to the Long Island Power Authority. We also talked to a number of authors and critics. One regular segment is Dave Gets Cultural, where I do theater reviews or debate the merits of recent Broadway and off-Broadway shows with other critics. And some programs are more comedy-oriented. We've done sketches, monologues, a raft of silly or parody songs. Where Were You? When we aired The Ballad of Pete Townsend, or The Enema Blues, or Joey the Spastic Kangaroo. I never said we were tasteful, I just said we'd try to make people laugh. And some episodes are very musical. Just before I went on vacation, I put together an all-music hour of stuff that I was listening to at the time. So, bystanders, that's what I call people who listen to Dave's Gone By, bystanders, they got to hear a mix of people like Beck, Ed Harcourt, Trish Murphy, Mary Fall, and that was just the normal stuff. Over the course of the show, we've also played folks like Tom Lehrer, Alan Sherman, Wildman Fisher, and Shuby Taylor. And we'll be playing a lot of music tonight, mixed in with the comedy. We have a huge News Gone By segment. Don't miss it. So if you're driving home, you get in the house, and you can't get this program on your radio, WGBB doesn't exactly have the strongest signal. In fact, if the hamster stops turning the wheel, all the mics go off. No, the station does have a fairly limited range, so if you try listening in the house, and the signal is weak or staticky, have no fear. The station has a new website, and the web stream is back up. You should be able to listen to this program on the internet. No, it's not WGBB.com anymore. It's AM1240WGBB.com. AM1240WGBB.com. And I'll be very upfront with you guys about this. Part of my deal with the station is that the internet web stream must be clear and working. I've got a bunch of listeners all over the country in Washington, D.C., Chicago, California, and when GBB's internet went down in early summer, it really put a divot in the listenership that I'm now trying to build back up. So please, if your radio works, if you can hear us in your car, your garage, your Walkman, great, stay with us. I think you'll enjoy the show. But if not, surf www.am1240wgbb, click on the link that says Listen Live, and listen live. And if you can't, please send me an email, davesgoneby@aol.com, because I've got to know whether the stream is working or not. It should work, by the way, with Internet Explorer, which means if you have AOL, if that's your browser, it should be fine. Unfortunately, it doesn't work with Netscape. If you have Netscape and it does, terrific, let me know. But don't expect it to. You'll probably just get an error message or some guy coming to your door and spraying you with asbestos. I don't know why Netscape has people do that. But Explorer should do the trick. AM1240WGBB.com. We're going to start the show in a moment or so, but one more thing. Only fair to mention, especially since we're airing around homework time and dinner time, this program is rated DGB-13. Dave's Gone By, 13. Our equivalent of PG-13. We don't do anything obscene or licentious or anything to make the FCC spray us with asbestos, but still, this is not a children's show. It's a show for people who want to feel like children. So, if there are young kids and toddlers hearing me tonight, make sure to ask your moms and dads if it's okay to listen to this show. And if they say no, the boogeyman will come to them when they're sleeping tonight and cut off their faces. Well, that takes care of that disclaimer. We'll be right back with more of the very first show of our very second season, The Story So Far, just 60 precious seconds from now. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It is so good to be back. This segment is called Dave's Goes Off, and it's usually reserved for a Dennis Miller-style rant about some issue that gets my goat. But sometimes it's more experiential, just sharing stuff that has happened, personal anecdotes and vignettes, incidents and accidents, as Paul Simon would say. And since I haven't been on the air since the end of July, I thought I'd take about 10 minutes and catch everyone up as to where I've been. One of the reasons I wanted to title this episode The Story So Far is because it is. And the story so far, when we left off, was I was just about to embark on my third trip of the summer. Now, I had been to the Twin Cities and Santa Monica. In fact, I told everyone I had gotten back from Santa Monica just 3 days before that 80-year-old man crashed into the market and would have basically killed me and killed this show. So, how lucky you are that I missed that. But this time, I went to see San Francisco for the first time in my life. And got there, airport security was beefed up just before we left. How wonderful is that, to be going on a trip, going to the airport, and, you know, just 3 days before that, you watch on TV that it's gone to yellow alert, and they're going to be checking everybody's computers and little mini cameras. That was what they were worried about a few weeks ago. Suddenly, all these terrorists were going to be swarming in with their little GAF viewmasters, and that's how they were going to take over the world. But not a big deal. The airport actually moved relatively quickly. It is kind of weird that men, and now women both, have to take off their shoes. How idiotic do you feel standing there, taking your shoes off, handing them to somebody, and then going for a 5-foot walk, and then putting your shoes back on again? It's just the most bizarre feeling. It's like going into a Japanese restaurant just to look around, and then coming back out. Now, when I got to San Francisco, the thing that I was not expecting, the thing that struck me as the oddest, was how much like New York it is. They say it's a prettier version of New York, but you know what? If you're not right by the bay, if you're not looking specifically at the Golden Gate Bridge, at that ocean view, it's really not that special or different from urban, gritty New York City, and certainly much hillier if you've ever tried to walk up some of those high streets and down. And I do want to say this about the fabled trolley cars, which finally got to ride on our last day there, but try and get one of those things on the weekend. We were waiting by the hotel, and there's lines snaked, well, it's not really around the block, it's sort of a holding pen area for, like, refugees who want to get up two streets, and rather than walk them, they basically want to take the trolley car, and also because, you know, it's the fabled San Francisco car. But I've got to tell you, don't even bother to try and get on them on the weekend. Weekdays we managed. Anyway, among the things that we did on our trip there was I got to see my cousin Dave, or I'm Dave, he's David, and his wife Mary, who took us to a restaurant owned by his dentist, which I'll tell you something. I always figured when I get there, every dish would have 10 pounds of sugar in it. And then 3 months later, you know, that's basically the reason he owns the restaurant. But it was actually very good. The name of the restaurant was called La Felce. And that's not a joke, F-E-L-C-E, delicious Italian food. I'm not doing a commercial for them, I just find the name, I heard that name, I was thinking, do people sit there and eat brown stuff with straws? But no, it's felce, which I thought came from the word, like, Spanish feliz, happy. But it actually means the fern in Italian, which is a completely useless piece of information, but I thought I'd share it. But San Francisco, I will say, is really a foodie place. We had a wonderful lunch in a Japanese place called Anzu in the downtown area of Union Square, and we did get to do quite a lot. It is a small city. It is walkable, would be a lot more walkable if you just every other street wasn't a mountain. I did see Chinatown, and there was like a fair there with wall-to-wall, or should I say great wall-to-wall, crowd at an open market on Friday night, which was kind of interesting, but a little suffocating. Okay, anyway, enough of my trip to San Francisco. If you've been there, you know what it's like. It's a wonderful town, but it is sort of, you know, New York West. Now, New York East, where were you when the lights went out? I know that already feels like the middle of the summer years ago, but I was home, looking for flashlights, running around. It was great because it happened pretty early in the day, in the middle of the summer, so there were about 5 hours when it was pure bright sunshine out. You could get the candles, you could run around, you go into the basement and find things, which we did. And did everybody out here feel that they caused the blackout? Like, you turned on that light switch, and then suddenly, you know, I went from one room, leaving the air conditioner on, to go turn the air conditioner on in the room I was going to. And my wife's like, oh, Dave, don't do that. I'm like, I'll turn the other one off as soon as I get... And suddenly, like, oh. But it wasn't my fault. It wasn't your fault. It was Canada's fault. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it was blame Canada for like the first week of the blackout. Not the first week of the blackout, but first week after it. Right out of South Park, we really tried to do that. And I do want to go on a little bit of a rant here on this Dave Goes Off segment. And the rant is that it's our president, right? President Bush. The one thing he's supposed to be good at is energy. He's an oil man. His family is oil. His vice president processes oil. So what happens? We're taking control of oil wells in Iraq, and as soon as we do, they're getting blown up. And then, just before Labor Day, the one holiday when everybody drives all over the country, the price of gas goes from $1.80 a gallon to over $2. And then, still under the administration of the oil president, a blackout all along the East Coast, all the way to Ohio. Now, first blackout since 1977, the biggest one, really, ever, or since 65. And you notice these blackouts never reach Texas. They never hit the Midwest. They never hit where the president is. No tragedy ever seems to hit him where he is at the moment. And isn't it the one thing that this president should be able to do is keep gas, oil, and electricity flowing cheaply and steadily, and he can't even do that? Well, enough of the rant on that. It was a good summer. I had a wonderful time. I missed the Fringe Festival. Me, a theater person. Just a combination of being busy and then the blackout in the middle of it. Sorry, there were a couple of Fringe Festivals with interesting shows in downtown New York. Missed them, but I did see Avenue Q and Off-Broadway, The Thing About Men, which we'll review in a week or two on this program. And I've got a rant again. I want to tell a little bit more, because I've done this on this show before. Please, why was everybody telling us back in the very, very beginning of September, when we had the 3-day Labor Day Jerry Lewis weekend, that was the end of summer? It was not the end of summer. Last weekend was not the end of summer. This weekend will be the end of summer, right into Monday, which is the first day of fall. I'm tired of the media and people and calendars and everybody just sort of shoving things in where they're convenient and not really doing things on the days that they ought to be. I've done rants about holidays where they'll take a famous dead president's birthday and we'll honor him by celebrating his birthday on another day because it's a Monday, because it's a 3-day weekend instead of the Thursday. So folks, for the sake of this show, if you believe in what I'm saying, make this weekend, even if it's raining out like today, even if it goes down to 40 degrees, even if we get hit by Hurricane Isabel, go to the beach, have a barbecue, sit on a hammock, make Homer Simpson noises, do what you want to do, because it's still summer. We still have one more week of summer left. Enjoy it. I know you're teaching in school, okay? I know you've had to come back from your vacations and go back to work, but pay attention to the solstice, to the weather, and not what people are telling you the weather is. Okay, now, finally, to some of the last stuff I wanted to rant about on this segment, which I guess you can tell is extemporaneous and not scripted. 9/11. Well, I didn't want to deal with the memorials this year. I watched them last year when they read the names, and it was touching and it was difficult. This year, it's already seeming like I'm glad we're honoring, I'm glad people are doing it, but didn't want to deal. In a few more years, I wonder if it's going to be like Pearl Harbor again. It's going to be like, hopefully, unless there's another attack, a distant memory. People will start to think, oh yeah, that was that day thing. It was, the day will almost go by without a thought. So, to give credit where credit is due, and I know I ranted on the president for 2 minutes there a little while ago, but it hasn't happened again yet in this country. Let's say at least that much in the favor of this administration. Now, at the same time, where is bin Laden? We're punishing Iraq, but not Iran, not Saudi Arabia, not Pakistan, not the Palestinians, not Libya. Okay, why Iraq? And the other thing I wanted to just sort of get in there is about the design of the new Twin Towers. People are saying, well, should it be an office building or a cemetery? Well, it is a cemetery, like it or not. But, and they've got all these designers, and they're arguing, and they're bickering. I say, if you want my advice, and nobody asked me, but I do have the radio show, so there's room, I think, there for a moderately sized office building, a middle-income apartment house, a small park, a monument, and a small museum, and a Starbucks. Well, you know, because there's always a Starbucks. Plus, this ties in with our next segment, the weekly News Gone By, and it's a biggie this week, a grande, and it's coming right up after this message. It's time on Dave's Gone By for the News Gone By, a look at events of the past week from a refreshed, returned, and relatively harmless perspective. We begin, as ever, with the terrorism, the war front, the 9/11 front, the miserable economy front, or, as George Bush would call it, the best of times. This past Thursday marked the second anniversary of September 11th, with people all over the world remembering the Arab terrorist attacks of 2001. In Manhattan, a fire bell was rung, bagpipes were played, children of the victims read off names of the dead, and vendors sold leftover I Survived the August Blackout t-shirts. Now, President Bush stayed in Washington and made a short speech on the White House lawn. He said he would pray for the lives lost on that terrible day, though he did add that he was grateful for the simultaneous attack on the Pentagon, since that spared him one more useless pre-election trip to New York. Now, plans for rebuilding the World Trade Center continue, as I mentioned before. It is not true, however, that Mayor Bloomberg has struck a deal to call the new structure the Snapple Verizon Quaker Oats Disney Funhouse Towers. In related news, it was revealed last week that the government pressured the Environmental Protection Agency to lie about the air quality of Lower Manhattan in the days following 9/11, rather than tell residents and emergency workers that the air was filled with asbestos, jet fuel, chemical toxins, and powdered human corpses. The official story was that the air was fine, just a little dusty. Now, I don't know why people are so shocked at this deception on the part of the Bush administration. After all, they want us to believe that chopping down forests is good for the environment, war is the way to achieve peace, and layoffs are the best way to solve unemployment. So why shouldn't they tell us that even though the air smelled like something coming out of Yul Brynner's left lung, it was absolutely safe to breathe? I just think the news media got its presidents mixed up. No question, Bill Clinton did inhale, and George Bush, 1,000 miles away, didn't. Now, speaking of the media, weird ruling by the FCC last week, although I kind of agree with it. The Federal Communications Commission designated the Howard Stern radio show a news program. The ruling is important because it allows them to book Arnold Schwarzenegger or Gary Coleman for interviews without having to give equal time to the other 130 candidates running for California governor. It's not the first time an entertainment show got a pass for sheer practicality. Phil Donahue, Politically Incorrect, even Jerry Springer have all been deemed, quote, bona fide news programs by the FCC. By allowing these shows to cross the line, the FCC says there's more room for political coverage and a wider range of interview styles and topics. Schwarzenegger has been a regular guest on the Stern program for years. No word, however, on whether any of the 2004 presidential candidates will go on the show, although Joe Lieberman did say he could fart Habanagila faster and better than Mr. Methane, and he has the underpants to prove it. On the international front, I'm not saying the Israeli military isn't as effective as it used to be, but look what happened a week ago. They dropped a 500-pound bomb on the building where Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, the founder of Hamas, was having a meeting. Yassin was only slightly wounded in the attack. This, despite the fact that Yassin has been a quadriplegic cripple in a wheelchair since an accident when he was 12. Now, of course, some Israeli officials are saying they weren't really targeting Yassin. He just happened to be there when they were going after other militants. But hey, you've got a 500-pound explosive, and the opportunity to blow up the founder of the most actively dangerous terrorist group in the occupied region, and you miss! That's like a drug addict breaking into Liza Minnelli's house and coming out with a bottle of aspirin. Meanwhile, Israel has vowed to expel putative Palestinian Pasha Yasser Arafat from his headquarters in Ramallah. As long as Arafat has a power base, the Israelis believe, terrorism won't stop and peace will be impossible. Now, while the Bush administration has said repeatedly that Arafat is part of the problem rather than the solution, on Friday, Colin Powell joined a bunch of United Nations countries in begging Israel not to say no, sir, to Yasser. Better, they say, to leave a lying, murderous, money-laundering terrorist in his compound, surrounded by fanatical followers, than exile him to a place where he just watches TV and eats grapes all day. Now, opposing the removal of Arafat, France's foreign minister said, quote, such a decision would be an error, even a mistake, that's unquote, proving that the French government is as retarded linguistically as it is socially. In local news, allegations of abuse and violence have surfaced among the football team at Mepham High School in Belmore. During a week-long football camp, at least three players endured a hazing that included being sodomized with broomsticks. The victims were too ashamed to tell anyone, but when two of them didn't stop bleeding after 3 days, they went to the doctor, and the truth came out. So far, the incident is being kept internally at the high school. The superintendent doesn't want to bring in the police, since these are underage kids, and police only have experience with plungers, not broomsticks. Said one investigator about the sodomy, the biggest irony here is that high school football players tend to be giant a-holes, not own them. On the money front, a study out of Washington, D.C. shows that the cost of health insurance has risen by double digits 3 years in a row, a jump of more than 50% since the year 2000. Consumer groups have called the inflated prices sickening, which prompted the insurance companies to say, prove it. When the consumers did, by pointing to 3 years of stagnant wages and skyrocketing premiums, the insurance company said, aha, too bad, that makes it a pre-existing condition. And when told that more than 41 million Americans are currently getting by without health insurance, the insurance company said, gee, I guess we'd better beef up our advertising. Well, you're listening to the News Gone By on WGBB AM 1240 and on AM 1240 WGBB.com, coming from Freeport, even though the actual office is in Babylon, and you're listening to the Dave's Gone By radio program. I'm Dave, Dave Lefkowitz, continuing the News Gone By with some amazing Broadway news. Remember a couple of years ago when they took the best movie comedy of all time, Mel Brooks's The Producers, and managed to make a pretty terrific musical out of it. Well, now plans are afoot to do the same thing with the third or fourth best movie comedy of all time, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Mike Nichols is directing the show, which is being put together by Eric Idle. He's adapting the screenplay of the film and adding a whole bunch of new songs co-written with a guy named John Duprez. The name of the musical? Spamalot. I kid you not, unfortunately the other Pythons are not going to be involved, especially Graham Chapman, as he's been dead for nearly 15 years. But rumor has it he may play a cameo role. My guess is it would be in this scene, which I think you'll agree absolutely cries out for a musical number.
Bring out your dead!
Bring out your dead!
Here's one.
Nonsense.
I'm not dead.
What? Nothing. Here's your ninepence.
I'm not dead.
Here. He says he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I'm not.
He isn't?
Well, he will be soon. He's very ill.
I'm getting better.
No, you're not. You'll be stone dead in a moment.
Oh, I can't take him like that. It's against regulations.
I don't want to go over the car.
Oh, don't be such a baby.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail, soon to be a big-budget musical called Spamalot, although Eric Idle apparently isn't fixed on that title yet. He said he's doing a North American concert tour this fall, and if he gets the feeling audiences don't like the name, he's willing to change it. I hope he doesn't, although if he must, I kind of like After the Spanking. And those of you who know the movie will understand why. From theater, we move to dance, and Moscow's Bolshoi Theater, where ballerina Anastasia Volochkova is having a big row with management. 12 hours before she was set to appear in Swan Lake. They called and told her not to show up. The dancer claims that she's either been fired or temporarily dismissed for being too fat. The theater's director says Anastasia has not been let go, but contract talks are stalled because, quote, none of the male soloists at the Bolshoi Theater agrees to dance with her, particularly in her current physical state, end quote. Volochkova, who is taller than most ballerinas, admitted to Reuters that she's rather partial to ice cream, though she does try to eat frozen yogurt instead. I love ice cream so much, she said. I can't imagine life without it. Well, the standoff continues, though rumor has it the ballet company is working on a compromise. Instead of starring in Swan Lake, Volochkova will be given a featured role in the sequel, Hippo Lagoon. In magical weirdo news, David Blaine is at it again. Bizarre but compelling showman David Blaine is currently hanging around in London. Quite literally, he's suspended in a see-through glass box, staying there for 44 consecutive days. He has water, but no food for all that time, and basically everybody comes to pass by, stare at him, and watch him slowly starve to death. Now, if you think Americans are cruel, if you think we're boorish and obnoxious while the English are reserved and uptight, dig this. Reuters reports that some Londoners haven't just come to observe. They're mocking him, pelting the glass box with eggs, and sadistically taunting him by wafting the odor of fish and chips in his direction. One Britisher sent up a little pilot plane with a cheeseburger. Another Britisher decided to wake Blaine up out of his hunger-induced stupor by banging on a drum. Drummer Shiraz Azam told the London Evening Standard, quote, we were watching him at home on TV, and it was really dull. So we thought we would come down and liven things up. I wanted to wake him up, unquote. Yeah, charming. I wonder, where was this guy on 9/11? Oh, I saw people jumping off the towers to their deaths, so I drew pictures of pillows on the ground to make them think they would have a soft landing. And when they hit, blammo! And speaking of crazy stunts,
I'm gonna mail myself a letter. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
But the song was made real last week when 25-year-old Charles D. McKinley chose a novel way to save money on airfare. Homesick for Dallas. I don't know how anybody can be homesick for Dallas, but nevertheless, feeling homesick for his wife and family, the New York-based shipping clerk decided to ship himself home. Cargo. He got a friend to box him up in a cargo crate, the genius taking no food, no water, and a broken cell phone. The scary part is, 3 days before the anniversary of 9/11, he made it through Kennedy Airport, by truck, to Newark Airport, then by air through the Indiana hub of Fort Wayne Airport, all the way to the door of his parents' house. If his mom and dad hadn't opened the box while the delivery guy was still watching, nobody would have known. But because the freight driver saw a pair of eyes and a body in the box, he called the cops. They arrested McKinley not for the incident, but for an outstanding traffic warrant and for passing bad checks in the past. Officials are still trying to figure out how this numbnuts, of all people, evaded security, and the district attorney is still trying to figure out what laws, if any, this guy broke. He said, quote, he violated the law of stupidity, if nothing else. And it's true, McKinley got lucky because on the plane his crate was put in a heated, pressurized hold. Had he not, his parents would have opened a box of frozen stew. Or worse, Charles McKinley could have suffered the fate of Waldo Jeffers, another fella, fictional I believe, who had the bright idea of parcel posting himself. So sit right back and you'll hear a tale all about the mail and how it can fail, told by John Cale.
Thank you. Waldo Jeffers had reached his limit. It was now mid-August, which meant he'd been separated from Marcia for more than 2 months. 2 months and all he had to show were 3 dogged letters and 2 very expensive long-distance phone calls. 2 and school had ended and she'd returned to Wisconsin and he to Locust, Pennsylvania. She had sworn to maintain a certain fidelity. She would date occasionally, but merely as amusement. She would remain faithful. But lately, Waldo had begun to worry. He had trouble sleeping at night. When he did, he had horrible dreams. He lay awake at night, tossing and turning underneath his pleated quilt protector. Tears welling in his eyes as he pictured Marcia, her sworn vows overcome by liquor and the smooth soothing of some Neanderthal, finally submitting to the caresses of sexual oblivion. It was more than the human mind could bear. Visions of Marcia's faithlessness haunted him. Daytime fantasies of sexual abandon permeated his thoughts. And the thing was, they wouldn't understand how she really was. He, Waldo, alone understood this. He had intuitively grasped every nook and cranny of her psyche. He had made her smile. She needed him, and he wasn't there. Ah. The idea came to him on the Thursday before the Mama's Parade. He just finished mowing and edging the Edison's lawn for $1.50. And then checked the mailbox to see if there's at least a word from Marcia. There was nothing but a circular from the Amalgamated Aluminum Company of America inquiring into his awning needs. At least they cared enough to write. It was a New York company, you could go anywhere in the mails. And then it struck him. He didn't have enough money to go to Wisconsin in the accepted fashion, too. But why not mail himself? It was absurdly simple. He would ship himself parcel post special delivery. And the next day, Waldo went to the supermarket to purchase the necessary equipment. He bought masking tape, a staple gun, and a medium-sized cardboard box just right for the person his bill. He judged that with a minimum of jostling, he could ride quite comfortably. A few air holes, some water, perhaps some midnight snacks, and it would probably be as good as going tourist. So by Friday afternoon, Waldo was set. He was thoroughly packed, and the post office had agreed to pick him up at 3 o'clock. He had marked the package fragile, and as he curled up inside, resting in the foam rubber cushioning he thoughtfully included, he tried to picture the look of awe and happiness on Marcia's face. As she opened her door, saw the package, tipped the deliverer, and then opened it to see her Waldo finally there in person. She would kiss him, and then maybe they could see a movie. If he'd only thought of this before. Suddenly, rough hands gripped his package, and he found himself borne up, landing with a thud in a truck that was off. Marcia Bronson had just finished setting her hair. It had been a very rough weekend. She had to remember not to drink like that. Bill had been nice about it, though. After it was over, he said he still respected her. And after all, it was certainly the way of nature. And even though, no, he did not love her, he did feel an affection for her. And after all, they were grown adults. And, oh, and Bill could teach Waldo. But that seemed many years ago. Sheila Klein, her very, very best friend, walked in through the porch screen door and into the kitchen. Oh, God, it's absolutely maudlin outside, she said. I know what you mean. I feel a licking. And Marcia tightened the belt in her cotton robe. Sheila ran her finger over some salt grains on the kitchen table, licked her fingers and made a face. I'm supposed to be taking these salt pills, she said, but they make me feel like throwing up. Marcia started to pat herself under the chin, an exercise she'd seen on television. God, don't even talk about that, she said. Got up from the table and went to the sink, where she picked up a bottle of pink and blue vitamins. One punch isn't supposed to be better than steak, and then attempted to touch her knees. I don't think I'll ever touch a daiquiri again. She gave up and sat down, this time near a small table that held a telephone. Maybe Bill will call, she said, to Sheila's glance. Sheila nibbled her cuticle. After last night, I thought maybe he'd be through with him. I know what you mean. My God, he's like an octopus. Hands all over the place. She gestured, raising her arms up while in defense. The thing is, after a while, you get tired of fighting with him, you know. And after all, I didn't really do anything Friday and Saturday, so I kind of owed it to him, you know what I mean? She started to scratch. Sheila was giggling with her hand over her mouth. I tell you, I felt the same way, and even after a while, here she bent forward in the whisper. I wanted to. And now she was laughing very loudly. It was at this point that Mr. Jameson of the Clarence Darrow Post Office rang the doorbell of the large stucco-covered frame house. When Marsha Bronson opened the door, he helped her carry the package in. Had his yellow and green slip signed and left with a tip that Marsha had gotten out of her mother's small beige pocketbook in the den. What do you think it is? She asked. Marsha stood with her arms folded behind her back. She stared at the brown carbon carton and sat in the middle of the living room. I don't know, she said. Inside the package, Waldo quivered with excitement as he listened to the muffled voices. Sheila ran her fingernail over the masking tape that ran down the center of the carton. Why don't you look at the return address and see who it's from? Waldo felt his heart beating. He could feel the vibrating footsteps. It would be soon. Marsha walked around the carton and read the ink-scratched label. Oh, God, it's from Waldo. That schmuck, said Sheila. Waldo trembled with expectation. Well, you might as well open it, said Sheila. Both of them tried to lift the staple flap. Whoa, said Marsha, groaning. He must have nailed it shut. They tugged on the flap again. My God, you need a power drill to get this thing open. They pulled again. You can't get a grip, and they both stood still, breathing heavily. Why don't you get a scissor, said Sheila. And Marsha ran into the kitchen, but all she could find was a little sewing scissor. Then she remembered that her father kept a collection of tools in a basement. She ran downstairs, and when she came back up, she had a large sheet metal cutter in her hand. This is the best I could find. She was very out of breath. Here, you do it. I think I'm going to die. And she sank into the fluffy couch and exhaled noisily. Sheila tried to make a slit between the masking tape and the end of the cardboard flap. But the blade was too big and there wasn't enough room. God damn this thing, she said, feeling exasperated. Then smiling, she said, I've got an idea. What, said Marsha. Just watch, touching a finger to her hand. Inside the package, Waldo was so transfixed with excitement he could barely breathe. His skin felt prickly from the heat, and he could feel his heart beating in his throat. It would be soon. Sheila stood quite upright and walked round to the other side of the package. Then she sank down to her knees, grasped the cutter by both handles, took a deep breath, and plunged the long blade through the middle of the package, through the masking tape, through the cardboard, through the cushioning, and right through the center of Walter Jeffers' head, which split slightly and caused little rhythmic arcs of red to pulsate gently in the morning sun.
From the 1993 Velvet Underground reunion album, The Gift, on Dave's Gone By. And the gift that keeps on giving in this segment is the News Gone By, news and current events Dave style. Some more stories for you. In science news, Carl and Clarence Aguirre, 17-month-old Philippine twins, joined at the top of the head will undergo a series of operations next month to be separated. Doctors at Montefiore Hospital in the Bronx say the surgeries are complex but manageable because the boys share some veins and arteries but have separate brains. Asked how the twins are managing the way they are, Mrs. Aguirre said they're fine, but a little annoyed with each other. Carl is always trying to comb Clarence's chest, and Clarence keeps tasting Carl's dandruff. More science news. Last week, NASA's Hubble telescope captured a picture of the rings of Saturn at their maximum tilt of 26 degrees towards the Earth. It's the best photo we can get of the South Pole and southern rings of Saturn for more than 30 years. In other news, NASA has also taken dozens of pictures of Uranus. And if you want that to stop, please wear pants around the house. Oh, wait. Here comes the sound. Yes, 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 you know that sound. It's the sound of the comedy bell signaling that Dave's gone by. Bad pun of the week. It's a tradition on this program. Every week, we make a play on words that so pushes the final frontier of tolerability, we have to stop everything and call your attention to it in a drastic and irritating fashion. Hence, the comedy bell. And once again, we want you, you meaning businesses out there with money, to sponsor the Bad Pun of the Week. If you've been listening to the show, enjoying the comedy, digging the music, bristling at or nodding vigorously for the opinions, just imagine the thousands of other people doing the same thing in their cars or offices or at home listening on the radio or the internet. If you want to reach them with your product, event, or service at prices that are so low, I don't even know why we bother. Oh, yeah, because we need money. Well, if you want to get the word out about what you do or the things you sell, do it on this program and link it to the News Gone By or one of our other segments or the Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week. Just imagine all these people in your town, in your district, saying something like, hey, you know that joke I heard on the radio last night about Yul Brynner's lung? Alfonso's restaurant sponsored that. Yeah, Alfonso's on Franklin Avenue. Let's go there and have a salad. Folks, it's that simple. So if you want to show off your company or service in the best possible light to all listeners of this radio and internet program, call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com and sponsor the Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week, 516-295-1511. Don't be good, be punderful. Continuing the News Gone By, in a musical vein, Brianna LaHara, a 12-year-old girl, has agreed to pay the recording industry $2,000 in a settlement for downloading music from the internet. The RIAA has instituted a Big Brother crackdown on music sharing, saying it costs the record industry millions of dollars each year in lost revenue. Opponents say the internet should be free and always remain so. They say, and I agree, that so long as people are listening to music by themselves or sharing it with friends and not reselling it for profit, downloading should be totally condoned. Now, these are my rules. If you're making a profit, the record companies and the artists deserve to be paid. If you're not making any money, you don't have to pay. And if you listen to Kenny G or Mariah Carey, the record company should pay you. Also in music news, Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel still singing after all these years. It's no secret the two have had their disagreements and rough patches over the years. Even when performing at this year's Grammys, the pair seemed less than cordial, but somehow they've been convinced to go back on the road together. Simon explained it's because they still have, quote, a very deep old friendship. I say it's because if you take the number 500 and you subtract the number of albums both men have sold over the last decade, you still get 450. But seriously, it is great that they're performing together again. And I hope to see them. And let's face it, if we wait another 10 years to see them, it won't be the sound of silence, it'll be the sound of senility. I'm not saying they're getting old, but this time when Paul sings, "Slow down, you move too fast," he'll be talking about his pacemaker. And the bridge over troubled water? That's just a metaphor for Garfunkel's diaper. And when Paul sings, "You can call me Al," he'll mean it, because he won't remember his own name. Yes, every conversation will be a dangling conversation, and the only thing slip-sliding away will be their teeth. And speaking of slip-sliding away, it's that special time again. A segment on the news gone by, Frivolous Lawsuit Time. It's Frivolous Lawsuit Time! It's Frivolous Lawsuit Time! Ask for a million, though it's not worth a dime. It's Frivolous Lawsuit Time! Yes, and this week's Frivolous Lawsuit comes to us from the Whammo Company. Remember them? They make hula hoops, frisbees, Super Bowls, and they've got a pair of Super Bowls on them for filing this lawsuit against Paramount Pictures, producers of the new David Spade film, Dickie Roberts, Former Child Star. In the movie, there's a scene in which the Spade character goes on the slip and slide. He greases it down with oil, slides across it, and crashes into a fence. Well, Whammo, not content to leave bad slapstick alone, is suing for fear that children will get the wrong idea and try this at home. First, they're complaining because the product guidelines clearly state that only children between 5 and 12, shorter than 5 feet, and weighing less than 100 pounds should go on the slide. Come in. Then they're grousing that if people forget to put water on the slide or forget to wet themselves down, they could get a carpet burn worse than the Hilton sisters visiting Charlie Sheen's house. Now granted, Whammo is just giving back the insanity it once got. Years ago, the company had to pay a guy $12 million because he got drunk, dove down the slide the wrong way, and paralyzed himself. But still, does that make it right for Whammo to ask a judge to pull Dickie Roberts from the theaters, or to force Paramount to insert a disclaimer in the trailer warning kids to use the product safely? I mean, what's next? Will the studio have to go back to all those Keystone Cops films and put warnings in about how cream pies hitting your face the wrong way could cause retinal damage? Or maybe in Gone with the Wind, Dick Van Dyke should come out in the middle and start rolling around on the grass, showing how to escape a fire with minimal smoke inhalation? Or with all the Warner Brother cartoons, where Wile E. Coyote steps on a rake and baps himself in the snoot? Do we really, you know, do we need Elmer Fudd to come out and say, "Be very, very careful. Wakes off a waking, not waking." Seems to me like the CEO of Whammo took one too many frisbees to the forehead, and that's why he's the villain of this segment, Frivolous Lawsuit Time. It's Frivolous Lawsuit Time! It's Frivolous Lawsuit Time! People are liars, lawyers are slime when it's Frivolous Lawsuit Time on Dave's Gone By. By the way, coming up on another half hour here on WGBB and GBB.com, AM 1240 Freeport, celebrity news continuing the news gone by, comedian Tommy Chong, best known for being the more stoned half of Cheech and Chong, was sentenced to 9 months in prison for selling drug paraphernalia. Amazing that after all these years, they suddenly discovered that Tommy Chong had a little drug stash. I mean, wasn't the giant bong in Up in Smoke something of a clue? Chong already lost a recurring role on That 70s Show because of the court case publicity, so he pleaded with Judge Arthur Schwab to do community service instead of jail time. This is what Chong said. This is not a joke. He said he once did have a drug problem with marijuana, but he beat it. How? By redirecting his energy into salsa dancing. This is a quote. "It's a Latin American dance that's awesome," said Chong. Astonishingly enough, the judge did not accept Chong's explanation, especially since the guy was arrested for having a pound of pot and for running a business that manufactured more than 7,500 pipes and bongs. It didn't help that the district attorney emphasized Chong's movie persona as one glamorizing drug use and ridiculing law enforcement. Chong's defense lawyer countered that this reasoning, quote, "blurred the distinction between reality and satire," to which Chong replied, "Wait, that's the whole point of marijuana." Asked by reporters what he'll do when he gets out of the joint, Chong laughed and said, "Why would I want to get out of a joint, man?" And from one addiction, we move to another, coffee. Possibly the Java Cup capital of the United States, Seattle, is gearing up for a political battle over espresso. A campaign by the organization Early Learning and Child Care came up with 35,000 signatures, all saying they would be in favor of a 10-cent tax on every cup of espresso or espresso-based coffee sold in Seattle. The idea is to put that dime towards child care for low-income families. Said the executive director of Early Learning and Child Care, quote, "If people are willing to spend an extra $3 to get a tall double latte with vanilla flavoring, they should be willing to pay an extra 10 cents for kids." Opponents say the additional fee is like double taxing the item. Some demonstrators going so far as to dress up in Revolutionary War costumes and dump burlap coffee sacks into the local lake. Personally, I think Starbucks and Tully's and Pete's and New World are committing highway robbery by charging $3 for a cup of coffee, and they can spare a dime for child care, or prison reform, or Medicare, or whatever crisis is being overlooked by the people in power. But the proposed tax would also hit small coffee shops and diners and mom-and-pop cafes, who charge $1.50 for a double shot and need every penny. Serious espresso drinkers are divided on the plan. Said one man, quote, "I don't know, I think they're trying to piggyback a nice idea on the wrong thing. I mean, why not put a tax on sofas or gasoline or those plastic shelves you can hang in the shower? This is just discrimination against coffee drinkers the same way New York went after cigarette smokers. I clipped out an article about it from the newspaper. I have it in my wallet. I'll get my hands on it. I'll stop shaking for a minute. I'll show it to you." Finally, in the news gone by, English performance artist Mark McGowan amused London with a new exploit. Last time, he walked 11 miles with a turkey strapped to his head to persuade fat people to eat less. This time, he pushed a monkey nut, which is in the peanut family, pushed a monkey nut 7 miles over 11 days down the street with his nose. On the last day of the journey, he pushed the nut all the way to Downing Street and up the steps of Tony Blair's house. McGowan did it to stress the need for grant money for students with rising college costs. "I've got £15,000 worth of debt," said McGowan, "and now I've got a sore nose." I don't know. If you want to stage a protest, and you have a sore nose, wouldn't the obvious method be to pick it? Yes, and that's the news gone by. For September 15th, 2003, please send your comments, opinions, and triple espresso grande mocha latte supremes to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. That's the address for all snail mail to the program, so get a pen. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email me at davesgoneby@aol.com, or leave a message at 516-295-1511. We reserve the right to read your letters and emails on the air, name withheld upon request. Yes, we're back on the air, back on WGBB AM 1240 for at least the next 10 weeks, probably more. I promised I'd bring the show back. I did bring the show back, but I need to hear from you. What made you laugh? What made you angry? What made you horny? I know that story about the toddlers joined at the head fed into a couple of fantasies out there. That's okay. It's all good. But I need to know you're listening and thinking and paying attention so I can keep showing the management of this and other radio stations that you're out there in force supporting this program. The number again, 516-295-1511. And that's also the number to find out about advertising and sponsorship rates. And the email again, davesgoneby@aol.com. So many ways to let me know your thoughts, internet, telephone, snail mail. I look forward to hearing from you, but please, no monkey nuts. I feel too sorry for those poor monkeys. Back after this. I hope you're enjoying this episode of Dave's Gone By, but maybe you're not. Maybe you're thinking, well, this episode is all right, but the one from last week, oh boy! Or the Christmas show, or the Australian one, or the... My God, what a feast of entertainment I have given you. But it's all over so fast. You hear it once on the radio and it's gone by. But not anymore! I've got the archives, baby, and I'm going to share them. Almost every single episode of Dave's Gone By is now available on audio cassette. Relive the golden moments of The Giving Chimp, Steve the Whistler, Seamus the Urine Man, and so much more. If you don't remember which segment aired when, just check the archive page of our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. Cassettes are just $10 each, and if you buy two or more, only $9 each. To order, just pick the air date you want and call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. That's 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. Hours of music, talk radio, and comedy, only $10 a tape, shipping included. Makes a great Rosh Hashanah gift, I guess. So call 516-295-1511 and get classic episodes of Dave's Gone By because you can. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. A little time left for a new segment of the show. I wouldn't call myself a nostalgic person, but I do like to mark the passings of things, the anniversaries and birthdays, and the obituaries. It's true that sometimes you don't appreciate things until they're gone, not always, but sometimes coming to the end is the only way to fully recognize their value, because there's no more point to being disappointed, or distracted, or dismissive. The body of work is there for you to pick up or put down, dive into, or walk away from. It is what it is, and since there's no more second-guessing, and since the person is no longer around to take the risks, or the safe paths, you can kind of look back with a wider view than you could when the person was alive. Now, I'm not saying you can't speak ill of the dead. Just because they're not breathing doesn't make them saints. But you can cut them a little slack, and also measure just what they contributed and what they meant to you. So that's why this segment is called Dave Remembers. It's a look back at people and events worth celebrating or reflecting on. And we start with two deaths in the entertainment world this week. One long expected, the other a complete shock. The shock was John Ritter, comic actor of Three's Company fame, who collapsed on the set of his current sitcom, 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. Turns out, he had an undiagnosed flaw in his aorta, and that's what killed him at age 54. I'm no fan or huge fan of Three's Company, but we all watched it. It was harmless, like a cleaned-up, slowed-down TV version of a British sex farce. Suzanne Somers may have sold the posters, and Joyce DeWitt may have... Well, I'm not sure what Joyce DeWitt ever sold, but it was John Ritter who carried the show. He was so likable, and malleable, and durable, if not quite hilariously funny, that he kept Three's Company from being just sleazy, or just a waste of time. I know he got some fine reviews for his work in serious films like Sling Blade and Tadpole, and I saw him on Broadway in the Neil Simon comedy The Dinner Party. And what was interesting about that, for me, was that it was a fairly serious look at relationships and marriage and divorce, couched in a very manufactured, almost farcical premise. All these ex-husbands and ex-wives are invited to a fancy dinner party, and none of them knows their former spouse is going to be there. Then, when they all show up, watch the fireworks. Well, the interesting thing is that Ritter starred in that play alongside another 1970s TV icon, Henry Winkler, of Happy Days. And while Winkler certainly didn't play the Fonz or anything like that, he was still doing a lot of shtick, playing up the dorky, nasal nerd persona he's been using, well, ever since the Fonz. It was amusing, but phony, and sometimes irritating. But Ritter was the one you watched, because while he still had funny lines to deliver, he also seemed to be playing more of a human being. He was also a big guy, with a prominent beard and something of a gut, no longer the lanky, fresh-out-of-college-y fellow we remember living with Janet and Chrissy, and then Cindy, and then Terry, and then Vicky on the one-season sequel, Three's a Crowd. So it really looked as if Ritter was going to have an intriguing second career, especially since he brought some of that mature but still comic persona to Eight Simple Rules. It really is a case of who knows what great stuff he would have done had he made it into his 60s and 70s. For example, look at Johnny Cash, a performer who, for all his colossal ups and downs, really had a steady career for 50 years. He was kind of neglected throughout the 1980s, and then Rick Rubin, the producer, saw the potential for something really powerful as Cash got older and weaker. Together, they used the voice and the persona of this hard-living, often tormented guy, this slowly crumbling tower of a man, to make some pretty strong musical statements. Cash died on Friday at age 71, or as God said when he saw him, "Wow, you really did hurt yourself today." Now, I don't need to do a Johnny Cash eulogy. There were a zillion folks doing that last week. But we've all taken his unique greatness for granted for so long, even when we fully recognize that he was a living legend. It's neat that the last few years he didn't just have to bow and accept accolades for being a genius when he was 40. He was a genius again at 70. Just like that kindred spirit Bob Dylan did when he released Time Out of Mind. Everybody went, "Whoa, to think we wrote him off for good this time, and now this." Well, I remember when I was a kid, my dad playing the Folsom Prison and San Quentin records a lot, two of the best live albums ever recorded, and of course hearing Boy Named Sue and I Walk the Line on the radio. My wife always says that she most respected Johnny Cash because he wore black all the time, not as a fashion statement, but as a social declaration. Actually, he didn't wear black all the time. If you look at his album covers, he wore everything from blue dungaree jackets to purple muscle shirts. But she's right. The idea of wearing black for the downtrodden, much the way Bob Dylan's Chimes of Freedom rang for every hung-up person in the universe, well, that's something to be admired and remembered.
Well, you wonder why I always dress in black, why you never see bright colors on my back, and why does my appearance seem to have a somber tone? Well, there's a reason for the things that I have on. I wear the black for the poor and the beaten down, living in the hopeless, hungry side of town. I wear it for the prisoner who has long paid for his crime, but is there because he's a victim of the time. I wear the black for those who've never read or listened to the words that Jesus said about the road to happiness through love and charity. Why, you think he's talking straight to you and me? Well, we're doing mighty fine, I do suppose, in our streak of lightning cars and fancy clothes. But just so we're reminded of the ones who are held back, up front there ought to be a man in black. I wear it for the sick and lonely old, for the reckless ones whose bad trip left them cold. I wear the black in mourning for the lives that could have been. Each week we lose 100 fine young men. And I wear it for the thousands who have died, believing that the Lord was on their side. I wear it for another 100,000 who have died, believing that we all were on their side. Things that never will be right, I know, and things need changing everywhere you go. But till we start to make a move to make a few things right, you'll never see me wear a suit of white. Oh, I'd love to wear a rainbow every day and tell the world that everything's okay. But I'll try to carry off a little darkness on my back till things are brighter. I'm the man in black.
I kind of wish this show was back on the air 2 weeks ago when Warren Zevon died. Another true original with a dark undercurrent, a twisted sense of humor, and a knack for writing catchy songs. Everybody's got a copy of Excitable Boy with Werewolves of London, Tenderness on the Block, Lawyers, Guns, and Money, but if you only know Zevon from Excitable Boy, do yourself a favor and grab Sentimental Hygiene. That album kicks ass. And find the CD for Wanted Dead or Alive, his debut record from 1969, 7 years before his first Elektra album. I remember saying when Bad Luck Streak in Dancing School came out that Warren Zevon was just one more album away from being as big a superstar as Bruce Springsteen. Well, so much for prophecy, but Zevon's legacy is a lot more than just the admittedly unmatchable Werewolves, and the fact that he worked up until the end is another mark of a true artist. You produce because you have to. Certainly, that was also true of Wesley Willis, who died on August 21st. Wesley was 40 years old and had released more than 50 albums. This, despite the fact that he was obese, often homeless, paranoid schizophrenic, retarded, which I'm sure whets your appetite to hear his music, but alas, I don't have time to do a Wesley Willis tribute tonight. If I did, there would be three or four different groups of songs that his stuff would fit into. There's the band song, where he would go see a band in concert and then sing a ditty about them. Basically the same lyrics for 80% of the song, just the name of the band being different. There would be the really special songs, which would be the ones about his own life. Things that happened to him, somebody either smashing a brick through his car window or vice versa, or him getting certain medications that he needed. Those are also pretty cool. And then just basic weird things that would go through his head. You literally got the feeling that some quick idea would pop into his brain. He'd see a tree or a microphone or talk to somebody, and 5 minutes later, he would come up with a song. So, as I said, in future programs, Wesley did over 400 songs, so there should be many opportunities to Willisize ourselves on future Dave's Gone Bys. And believe it or not, this program is just about toast. We're done. All that's left is to thank a bunch of people. Station manager Jeff, engineer Joe Salzone, and Joe has his own program. He actually has, I think, 14 different programs on WGBB. The one I'm supposed to promote now is Your World with Joe Salzone. That's on Sundays from 6 to 7 p.m. And Joe, do you want to just tell what's going to be on this coming week? on this coming Sunday? Here he comes.
Oh, Dave, I have no clue what's going on this week. Actually,
yeah,
we're going to take a look at the situation out there in the Middle East.
There's a situation in the Middle East?
There is a situation. I don't know if you know about this.
No,
but,
I have no idea.
Can peace prevail if Yasser Arafat is removed from power, or would that create more violence? We'll take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do a lot of other fun things.
Now, you're also on another time on Sunday. Are you on from 11 to midnight Sundays as well?
That's the late night version. Or if you're out the West Coast, that's the prime time version. But out here on the East Coast, it's the late night version.
Gotcha.
Just a place to sit here for an hour and chill out and talk about whatever.
Cool. And by the way, you also heard Joe before my show, and
yep.
I guess you can every week on Monday nights. I go on at 6:30. Joe hosts WGBB tonight on the Monday night edition.
And you won't hear anyone at this station, any other station, plug your show like I did on.
It was wonderful. My nipples were hard when you were doing that.
Well, that was not my goal.
No, it was just a happy side effect. What can I say?
It's good to have you
wonderful
back.
Wonderful count. Thank you, Joe. It's fun to be back. It's great to be working with you again, there in the booth and outside the booth and all that sort of thing. So listen for Joe Salzone Monday nights, 6 to 6:30, Sunday nights from 6 to 7. That's his big show, Your World with Joe Salzone. And then he generally also takes the 11 to midnight hour on Sundays. And listen for Bonnie D. Graham from 6 to 7 p.m. I think she has an hour now on Fridays with Long Island's Dating. Let's see, what else do I have to do before I go? I have to thank my wonderful wife, Joyce, for supporting me in season number 2. And I hope it doesn't turn into a number 2 of a season. I don't know what that means. Thank all of you, of course, for listening, for giving me a weekday chance. If you had a good time, if you had a rotten time, either one, email me at davesgoneby@aol.com and let me know. And make sure you get a look at the Dave's Gone By website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. There are pictures, playlists of all the songs we've spun, not just on this episode, but going back to the very first one. News about what's coming up, info on how you can buy cassettes of vintage Dave's Gone By programs, plus a whole lot more. That's hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. If you forget the URL, just Google search Dave's Gone By, and you should find the link pretty quick. Oh, a reminder also about advertising and sponsorship. You should do it. We've got a full hour and a half now, Monday nights. Big audience, big potential, bargain prices. So call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com and we'll give you all the information on how to reach people listening who are just like you, only better. 516-295-1511. Also, I want to thank our producers, www.totaltheater.com. Oop, I hear the sound of the Water Boys in the background slowly fading away, which means it's time for me to WGBB gone. So next week, more comedy, more music, more matter with more art. Monday night, September 22nd, 6:30 to 8 p.m. again. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Rock over London. Rock on, Chicago. And gone by.
The views expressed in the previous program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff or management of this station. You're listening to 1240 AM WGBB.